vamos.
Greetings, bad movie lovers, and welcome to a special sneak preview of one of the new members-only series here at the show, Bimon Sci-Fi Con.
That's right, it's Bimon Sci-Fi Con!
Join me and my co-host Stephanie Kennerly, who you may remember from such episodes as Volcano, Sudden Death, and Life, as we get together twice a month to venture across the landscape of science fiction from the astounding to the absurd. Last time out, we were rocking with Ivan Reitman's Evolution, and this time we're going deeper into the sci-fi satire pit with Adam McKay's Don't Look Up from 2021. I hope you enjoy the preview. So, why did you actually pick this movie?
It is exactly my type of humor. It made me laugh all throughout. Some of the dialogue is just hilarious. Just makes me roll on the floor every time I see it. I vibe with the sort of political message and the cautionary tale of allowing this science by popular opinion to dictate the course of human events. And I also like, it's really freaking ballsy movie. It parodies a whole lot of people with barely disguised characters in an extremely unflattering light, and then basically calls out a significant portion of the population in the process. So, which was a reason why I was a little hesitant about picking this, but in the end, I had to go with my heart.
Yeah, I think, you know, the heart wants what it wants, and I mean, I don't think anything is unflattering as those Vanity Fair pictures that I've been seeing all of this morning in the last couple of days. But that aside, this is obviously like very thinly veiled satire. It's a lot funnier than I experienced watching it the first time. And I didn't love it or hate it the first time. I remember at the time it came out, you know, I was probably online really getting into maybe like film circles a little bit more at that time because of the pandemic. And I remember being in a space and having a conversation about it. And most of the people were like really sort of ragging on it. I know a lot of people that I've talked to have also expressed that they just don't like how sort of like overtly direct it is in its messaging. And I'm like, well, like, I understand maybe you don't want your movies to be like heavy-handed politically, but like, that's what the movie is about. So it's kind of like there's no avoiding it in this situation. Like, comparatively, I would say maybe Idiocracy is maybe the closest in terms of like making fun of a very particular sort of type, but also doing it through like political satire. And like Idiocracy is obviously like cranked up a little bit more in terms of like the silliness. But I don't know, like the more I look back on Idiocracy, I'm like, ugh. Like, it is surprisingly accurate, even as dumb and as like, you know, cartoonish as it is. And then this movie is obviously more dialed in directly to the, we'll say, the temperature of the room at the time. And like watching this only 4 years later, it's probably even more frighteningly accurate and funnier than it was at the time that it first came out.
Yeah, I did a rewatch on it at the beginning of this year that I think it, I maybe hadn't watched it since it was new, but then when I rewatched it, I was like, wow, this is so much more appropriate than it even was when it came out. And it didn't come out that long ago. It just seems like things just keep getting worse, and business interests invading like politics and dictating you know, policy that affects the entire planet and stuff. It just keeps, like, with the whole AI thing and the resources that requires, and all, it just seems even more prescient than it did when it came out. And that is something that makes me enjoy movies on another level.
That's a good point. I mean, because obviously this movie is happening after, I mean, development is happening sort of around the end of the first Trump administration, and it gets released after that. So it's kind of like, at the time it comes out, it was almost like, okay, that thing happened.
Yes.
And here's us making fun of some of the things that we noticed. But then to, like, watch it again in the first year of the new Trump administration is, like, I mean, like, it's fucking really funny, but also it's, like, it's unfortunately depressing. Funny.
Yeah. When it came out, it had this feeling of, like, look at this bullet we dodged.
Yes.
And then it's like, hey, look at this bullet we just shot back into our temple. It's, it feels... It goes from an enjoyable watch to, like, an angry enjoyable watch. Like, yeah, those motherfuckers. Like, that's just kind of, like, the vibe I'm in when I watch it now. Whereas when I first saw it, it was kind of like, yes, this is right and this is stupid and I can't believe we ever went through that. And it's like, I can't believe we ever went through that and now we're going through it again. So there's my whiny voice for you.
I think, you know, at the first time that, well, when it originally came out, a lot of the stuff that it is making commentary on was maybe, like, even just slightly more disguised. But to see it now, to see, like, the Mark Rylance character, and,
yes,
like, I'm like, oh my God, because, like, he always, like, he came across to me very much like a Steve Jobs type.
Yes.
Which is, you know, the point, I think. But also to now see 3-4 years later, like, we had a tech bro all about his satellite culture and Starlink and all this bullshit, like, in the White House, very close to the administration, like, dictating policy. It was a little bit frightening to look at it that way and be like, wow, like, even before it happened, you know, obviously Adam McKay wanted to say something about that, but it's like the cartoonish nature of the movie was, like, it was cartoonish until the parallels after the fact are like, oh wow, it's actually super duper accurate, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And yes, it is, like, you know, dialed up, but, like, Jonah Hill, the son who, like, can be seen, like, kind of, like, wiping cocaine away from his nostril at one point during the film, and sort of him, like, he delivers a line to Jennifer Lawrence in the film where he like fist bumps her and he's like, thanks for dressing up.
Yes.
Coming to the White House. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, literally, we just saw this in the news within the last 6 months about the vice president teasing somebody for not wearing a suit to the White House. And I'm like, oh my God, what is happening here? So, like, give credit to McKay for really, like, good satirists, I think, can read between the lines and really get into an area of truth. And, like, when Mike Judge similarly is making Idiocracy, right? I'm sure he's not like, hey, we're going to have, like, an ex sort of reality TV star be the president. It's just like, as a satirist, you sort of, like, look at the most ridiculous option, and then, like, that is how you contextualize it. So I'm sure, like, Mike Judge is not thinking, like, these things are going to be true at some point in the future, but it's like, yeah, if we're not careful, like, this is the extreme example of what's going to happen. I think Adam McKay did a really good job with that here as well.
Yeah, you know, I get this feeling that, like, it's intending to extend reality into absurdity, but the more time passes, the more it becomes, I don't know, believable. Like, absurdity becomes believable, and that's what's so frustrating about the world and sitting here with this feeling like you can't do anything about it, like you're, you know, sitting on a freight train that's just running towards the end of a track off a cliff, and what are you supposed to do, you know?
Yeah, you set out to make sort of like an extremist example, and then reality catches up with you because you didn't like set the bar low enough, I guess. And so we end up back where we were, worse off than we were. I mean, fortunately, I mean, there actually is a interstellar object on its way to Earth right now. I don't know if it's going to make impact, but I mean, like, what are the odds?
Please come. That would be fine with me. At this point, that's the better option. Sorry to the rest of the world, but my nihilism is showing.
Well, I, for one, am not looking forward to a comet impacting the planet, but I understand. And I mean, that the movie, when it gets into that, like, does grapple with that a little bit. But before we get there, the movie is very funny. It's a lot funnier than I remembered. I like seeing Leo do comedy, and I feel like some of what we saw from him here is some of what sort of made his performance in One Battle After Another kind of work in a very similar light, where it's like he's funny, but he's not a character that's really like trying to be funny. He's playing the character very straightforward, and it's just like circumstantially funny, but he is a good actor, and I want to see him do more comedy. I don't know about you, but like, I'm trying to think of like movies where he actually like gets to have fun in a comedy, and I don't, like, there's only a couple that I can think of.
I can't think of any. And as you were saying that, you know, that it was good to see Leo in comedy, I immediately, my thought was, what if any has he done before? And my brain did not give me any sort of suitable answer. Yeah. So I don't know, but I agree. He does. He does a good job. It's entertaining to watch him, especially the scenes where he, you know, freaks out. And I love the scientist paralyzed by anxiety thing. And he plays that fabulously. So
yeah, he'll only take half a Xanax, because, you know,
other than he says a quarter
a quarter of, which, a Xanax.
Yeah. Those are the days. Those quarter Xanax days are behind us now.
Full Xanax from here on out. But I want to talk about the cast a little bit, because obviously it's a very, very big cast. Even though Leo is like the sort of like the A side of the equation, right? I mean, like, Meryl Streep is in this movie. Jennifer Lawrence, I think, is arguably the lead in this film as well.
Four Oscar winning females in this movie or something.
Something like that. And then you also have, like, you know, very sort of like pop culture relevant characters, like Ariana Grande is in this movie, which, you know, my wife loves Wicked. So I'm like, babe, look. And she's playing like a version of herself as well, which is kind of cool. And, you know, Tyler Perry gets a fun role in this. Who is your favorite character in the movie?
I mean, it's hard to look past Jennifer Lawrence's character, just because I identify with so much of her just like take no shit attitude and like, what the fuck, I'm just going to tell it like it is. And no, I'm not wearing that outfit on air. I'm just going to wear my own clothes and all that kinds of stuff. And how in the end she's just like, fuck it, I'll sign whatever. And she starts working at the Drinkmo. And I don't know. I suppose I identify with her the most. In terms of like the most entertaining character, I would probably have to pick somebody else, like maybe Mark Rylance's character. But it's so great with such a huge ensemble cast and so much variety of characters that we could spend the whole show talking about the characters, but probably we'll spare the audience.
Well, I mean, we've got time. It's our
That's
show.
That's true. So. We can just see how it goes. So, of course, you need to let me know what your characters.
It's Mark Rylance. You know, the first time I watched it, he was the one that stood out, but it was also because I had just sort of like, he had just won Best Supporting Actor of the year before. And so I was still like sort of primed for his performance here. But also, it's like he saddled with these giant like veneers that they gave him. And so just like all the character choices with him, and like he's it definitely seems like he's sort of a character that's like maybe on the spectrum a little bit, like the way that he like won't look at people in the eye and just sort of like zones off while having these full conversations, and his whole thing about like how like the first time he's introducing I think it's like the phone tech that he's working on, and that like it'll detect when you're sad and it'll show you like a puppy riding a chicken, and like how that's packaged as like this good thing, but then there's all these like kids on stage that are like 7 or 8 years old, and it's like it's very kind of like post-apocalyptic but done dressed up in a way that, you know, sort of mirrors what we've seen out of a lot of these like tech conferences. And so he's just a lot of fun because of the performance and like the rigidity of it. I would say this time though, I really like Timothée Chalamet a lot more. Granted, he comes in at the end. I think his role actually plays like a much larger part than I initially thought. More like when I first watched it, I'm like, ah, he's just kind of like a background character, right? But I feel like that isn't so much the case, and he represents this kind of like earnestness and I don't know, integrity in a movie that like none of the other characters really display at any point.
Yeah, you know, I made a note when I was watching last night about that Timothée Chalamet was very underutilized in this movie. And I agree with that. But I also think that you hit on a good point about that the character kind of satisfies an important niche in the story of being this sort of, he's sort of like the representation of the youth culture that doesn't know what to believe, doesn't necessarily have any ill intent, but maybe isn't part of the solution. Like he's dating the person that, you know, discovered the comet. And at one point he basically says, I'm not even sure if it's all real or not. And it's like, wow. Okay. That's probably not something I would be saying to the person who, you know, lost their entire life trying to get the rest of the world to believe in and take action on this impending threat. But he's just so earnest in his interactions that he doesn't have a problem admitting that. Yeah, he plays kind of an interesting role in the story.
Thank you for checking out this preview episode of Baimon SciFiCon. I look forward to embarking on this journey with Stephanie, and I hope you had a good time with us too. If you did, you can join the Resistance members only and get more exclusives like Bad Movie Futures, Rom-Comathon, and anything else I decide to tack on by clicking on the link in the show notes or going to badmovieswelove.captivate.fm/support. Yes, that is a mouthful. Probably switching over to Patreon in 2026. So, until next time, thank you for listening. Be good, do good. Take care, everybody.
Mr. Pop.
Eat.